Taiwan has a rich history of many different influence, from China to Japan to the States to Korea to their own traditional culture from the aborigines here. So it's a very special country in Asia.
There's no assurance that if we did that, we wouldn't end up with Mugu dog pan or Mugu cat pan.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Singapore barrels backwards on gay sexuality. Human stories hail equality at Taiwan's first queer film festival. And Looney Louie massages the U.S. military. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Ryan Pest.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending November 1st, 2014. Singapore's highest court ruled this week that the city-state's sodomy law, known as Section 377A, is constitutional. It's been on the books since the small Southeast Asian island was a British colony and punishes gross indecency with up to 2 years in prison. The ruling came in response to two lawsuits. One was filed by a longtime gay couple, Gary Lim and Kenneth Chi, and the other by Tan Eng Hong, who was arrested under 377A for engaging in oral sex in a public restroom in 2010. A three-judge panel of the Court of Appeal agreed with lower court rulings that the issue belongs in Singapore's legislature, not the courts. Whilst we understand the deeply held personal feelings of the appellants, there is nothing that this court can do to assist them, the judges wrote. Their remedy lies, if at all, in the legislative sphere. Activist lawyer M. Ravi, who represents Mr. Tan, told the Straits Times that the decision was a huge step backwards for human rights in Singapore and said it was disturbing that the court has thrown this issue back to Parliament. Human Rights Watch and other advocacy groups expressed essentially the same sentiment. The government has said it doesn't enforce 377A, but it needs to stay on the books to reflect the conservative views of society.
Ugandan courts have dismissed charges against three men who were arrested for violating the East African nation's version of the same British colonial-era sodomy law. Sam Ganafa, who leads the LGBT rights group Spectrum Uganda, was arrested in November 2013, along with three others who were staying in his house. He was acquitted in mid-October 2014 after the judge tired of repeated postponement requests by the prosecution. The three other men arrested with Ganafa fled to neighboring Kenya and have reportedly faced dangerous conditions awaiting refugee resettlement in that similarly homophobic country. Sodomy charges against two others were dropped a week prior to Ganafa's, apparently because the prosecution was unable to produce any witnesses after also asking the magistrate for several postponements. 24-year-old businessman Kim Mukisa, who reportedly identifies as gay, and his 19-year-old transgender partner Jackson Mukasa were arrested in Kampala in January and charged with living as husband and wife after escaping a violent mob. They each spent 4 months in prison before being released on bail in May.
But a new version of Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill is reportedly being fast-tracked as Parliament ends its brief recess. An earlier version, signed by President Yoweri Museveni, was overturned on a legal technicality by Uganda's Constitutional Court earlier this year. It punished what it called aggravated homosexuality with up to life in prison, outlawed advocacy for LGBT rights, and required citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the authorities. Specifics of the new version are hazy. Some lawmakers have said it will only focus on banning the promotion of homosexuality to children. But one has called for the criminalization of all anal sex, even between heterosexual married couples. Conscious of condemnation by Western countries of the anti-gay legislation and its impact on foreign aid, Museveni may now even find ways to delay its enactment if it passes. But a key sponsor of the new bill told reporters that, "We are more energized that our culture, our norms, and our religious norms are protected."
But in response to a periodic review, the government of the South Asian island nation of Sri Lanka has advised the United Nations Human Rights Committee that the country's constitution bans discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. When pressed, however, a representative of the Sri Lankan Attorney General's Department denied that the country's colonial-era sodomy law criminalizes sexual minorities. She claimed that those provisions of the penal code do not target any particular group, but are there to protect public morality. The code outlaws gross indecency without defining exactly what gross indecency is. The Sri Lanka LGBT advocacy group Equal Ground said that the government's confirmation that bias against LGBT people is constitutionally banned may not rain sunshine for the LGBTIQ community just yet, but there is now at least a sense of hope things will start changing in Sri Lanka, and that the LGBTIQ community will be able to hold their heads a bit higher as the days go by.
Meanwhile, millions of young and older people around the world celebrated Halloween on October 31st, but the government of Jordan officially banned it. Muslim fundamentalists rioted the past 2 years in the capital of Amman against the observance of what they called a homosexual and satanic holiday. The country's Muslim Brotherhood firebombed a cafe in 2012 because it was hosting a Halloween party, saying on its website that the event was a challenge to the values of the Jordanian people and their Arab and Muslim identity. The Ministry of the Interior announced the formal ban earlier this week after several groups had asked the department for permission to hold Halloween celebrations.
Elsewhere, U.S. United Methodist Church pastor Franklin Schaefer, who was defrocked for officiating at his gay son's Massachusetts wedding in 2007, was refrocked this week. The church's judicial council, which is the final word on the matter, decided that a Pennsylvania church jury was wrong to discipline Schaefer last year for disobeying the church, but it ruled on technical grounds and not in support of marriage equality. Although the United Methodist Church welcomes gay and lesbian members, its Book of Discipline rejects sex outside of heterosexual marriage as incompatible with Christian teaching. Schaefer has said that his love for his son and God's command to love everyone trumped any church doctrine. He told the Associated Press this week that this is a positive decision that keeps the dialogue going. They didn't bar a person who is an outspoken activist and who has said that, if asked, he would perform another gay marriage. Schaefer had led the congregation of Zion United Methodist Church in Iona in Pennsylvania's South Lebanon Township for 11 years. He was transferred to a California ministry in July and has been traveling the U.S. advocating in sermons and speeches the acceptance of LGBT people.
There was a dim but perhaps hopeful light amidst the mostly homophobia-filled darkness of a conference of the U.S. Southern Baptist Convention called The Gospel, Homosexuality, and the Future of Marriage in Nashville, Tennessee this week. The three-day conference of America's largest Protestant denomination attracted more than 1,000 evangelical pastors and laypeople. Russell Moore, president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, which sponsored the conference, publicly renounced so-called reparative or cure therapy, a widely debunked prayer-based practice that purports to make lesbians and gay men straight. In passing, he also deplored the epidemic of LGBT youth homelessness as a human dignity issue. But Southern Baptist Theological Seminary President Albert Moeller said that it was slander against the gospel for us to redefine sin in any way, and called marriage equality a rejection of God's law. A florist who had refused to provide flowers for the wedding of a same-gender couple won a standing ovation.
In other news, Apple CEO and Alabama native Tim Cook surprised very few people this week by officially announcing that he's gay in a Bloomberg Businessweek essay. It still put him among the highest-profile out business leaders in the world, and the only out chief executive of a Fortune 500 company. "I'm proud to be gay," he wrote, "and I consider being gay among the greatest gifts God has given me." The highly private Cook said that he's been open about his sexual orientation with many people, including his predecessor Steve Jobs and other colleagues at Apple. He's actually topped Out Magazine's annual issue of the most powerful LGBT people, though never until now acknowledging that he belonged on the list. "I don't consider myself an activist, but I realize how much I benefited from the sacrifice of others," Cook wrote. So if hearing that the CEO of Apple is gay can help someone struggling to come to terms with who he or she is, or bring comfort to anyone who feels alone, or inspire people to insist on their equality, then it's worth the trade-off with my own privacy. We paved the sunlit path toward justice together, brick by brick, he concluded. This is my brick.
Almost universal praise greeted Tim Cook's public exit from the closet. Almost universal. Vitaly Milonov, the author of St. Petersburg's notorious No Promo Homo law, upon which Russia's national law was based, said Cook should be prevented from entering the country. What could he bring us, he asked, according to a BuzzFeed translation of a Flash Nord interview. The Ebola virus, AIDS, gonorrhea? They all have unseemly ties over there, he warned. Ban him for life.
But finally, the small Baltic nation of Latvia, a former Soviet satellite, has banned a Russian sitcom actor from entering the country because he's said that all gay people are a living danger to my children and should be burned alive. Foreign Minister Edgar Rinkevich said Ivan Oklubaystin, a former priest, would not be allowed to give a one-man show about religion in Riga on November 7th because of what the minister called the performer's hate speech. As if to confirm that assessment, Oklubaystin said last week that people who've died from Ebola would come back as zombies. When asked if he was joking, he said no, and that he had purchased a crossbow just in case.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 1st, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Ryan Pest.
And I'm Natalie Peoples.
In breaking news, 8 Egyptian men who were charged with debauchery for appearing in what the media called a gay wedding video were each sentenced to 3 years in prison on November 1st. The footage sparked a national uproar in August when it went viral on social media sites in the conservative Muslim country. We'll have more on that story next week.
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
What do many of its Asian neighbors have that Taiwan did not have until now? Prepare to dim the lights and butter your popcorn later in the program.
They sets around in this place they got, this big congressional parking lot. Just sets around in there, you know what? Up there they calls it Taiwan. The country's in the very best of hands, the best of hands, the best of hands.
Whenever Texas Republican Congressional Representative Louie Gohmert speaks, credibility meters implode. Gohmert is currently serving his 5th term in the U.S. House, so chronicling his career of, shall we say, unique comments would be fruitless, so to speak. But his pronouncements this week on U.S.-China relations and military service by gays and lesbians will give you a good idea. Comedy Central's faux conservative commentator Stephen Colbert was all over it.
Nation, when it comes to defending America, there is nobody I trust more than Texas Congressman and confused piece of gnocchi, Louie Gohmert. Because this man is brave enough to say the things that no one has the slightest desire to say.
Thank you, President Barack Hussein Obama. He has helped jumpstart a new Ottoman Empire. We're going to borrow more money from the Chinese to possibly give them money back to create habitats for wild dogs and cats that are rare. There's no assurance that if we did that, we wouldn't end up with Mugu dog pan or Mugu cat pan.
This good man is always worried about food safety. Ever since he drank that paint thinner, it's only 2 letters away from paint dinner. And recently, Louis made words with his mouth again. This time, to explain once and for all the dangers of gays in the military.
I've had people say, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with, gays in the military. Look at the Greeks. Well, you know, they did have people come along who they loved. It was the same sex and would give them massages before they went into the battle. But you know what? It's a different kind of fighting. It's a different kind of war. And if you're sitting around getting massages all day, ready to go in the big planned battle, then you're not going to last very long. It's guerrilla fighting. You are going to be ultimately vulnerable to terrorism. And, if that's what you start doing in the military, like the Greeks did, as people have said, Louis, you got to understand, you don't even know your history. Oh, yes, I do. I know exactly. He's thinking of another good idea.
Oh, yeah. Gohmert knows his history. Or he may have just been watching the gay version of the film 300. By which I mean the one released in theaters. And the Greeks were the gayest army in history. It's why they were always traipsing off for fabulous Mediterranean wars. And why they fought packed together in a phalanx, a.k.a. the man-on-man massage cube. So I stand with Louis when he says this.
As people have said, Louis, you got to understand, you don't even know your history. Oh, yes, I do. I know exactly.
You studied military history.
Not a good idea.
I'm with you, sir. People have said to me, Stephen, you got to understand, you don't even know your history. You're dumb. You're dense. You're a mental midget with the IQ of a butter dish whose mind is a black hole that sucks all surrounding thought into it in an infinite singularity of pure stupidity. Stephen, I'm surprised you can ever dress yourself. I bet you have to rub peanut butter inside your lips to remember to open your mouth to breathe. I have never met, and I hope to never meet again, a man so pervasively, astoundingly, unyieldingly ignorant. To which I say, well, then you haven't met Louis Gohmert.
That was Comedy Central's Stephen Colbert.
The country's in the very best of hands.
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out.
And cut. Print. All right, that's the keeper.
Movies is magic. Real life is tragic. I regret I gotta say, it's time we get away to the movies and magic.
Taiwan has become East Asia's most vibrant democracy since the lifting of martial law in the mid-1980s, and it's considered to be the region's most LGBT-friendly society. Up to 70,000 celebrants attended the 13th annual Taipei Pride Parade on October 25th. That event was preceded by a marriage equality demonstration of some 20,000 people at Parliament earlier in the month. The only thing missing in the country's advance toward full inclusion seemed to be a film festival. So, in an already banner month for the movement, October's first Taiwan International Queer Film Festival also made history. PCJ Radio International's Keith Perrin learned more and explored the unique Asian island with the festival's international coordinator, Victor Stevenson.
Taiwan has already several film festivals that show LGBT queer content. So I think even for us, when we started planning and thinking about the festival, we were like, when do we do it? Like, there's so many film festivals, and how do we make ourselves different from other festivals that already show queer content?
You know, it's an interesting point that you make, because one of the largest book and music retailers in Taiwan, called S-Lite, at their flagship store, which is near downtown Taipei, in the video section, they even have a gay and lesbian film section, which is something, of course, that you
that
wouldn't
you
find,
don't see in China, you don't see in Singapore, you don't see in... That's what I think, like, you know, I mean, repressed societies, you have all these rebellious movements where you're trying to organize it here. But here, actually, the queer community is quite visual compared to other Asian countries. We have openly gay TV hosts, we have openly gay directors. I mean, there's a few celebrities that are openly gay, or at least very gay-friendly, like Amei, one of the singers, which is one of the major stars in Asia. She's straight, but she's completely gay-friendly and very open about it. I think, like, the LGBT queer community had had other outlets. What we really wanted to do is to show the whole LGBT community. I think a lot of other festivals might show, like, a few just gay films, like male homosexual films. But we really tried to showcase the whole LGBT community. So we had transgender films that talk about transgender, films that talk about lesbian, films that talk about the HIV problems. And we also decided to bring films that talk about really human stories. So you, if you're gay, you can bring your parents, you can bring your friends, and hopefully educate and make changes in the society. So we have films that basically talk about friendship and first love and aging and discovering yourself. It's not just gay men coming out of the closet.
When I was living in China, in Beijing, organizers tried to organize a gay and lesbian film festival, and it was on for about 2 days before the authorities shut it down. But I have to say, what was interesting, though, and people that I know that went to it, and I was looking at the schedule, and I was thinking to myself, well, wait a minute, all these films seem to be quite depressing.
Yeah. This film festival is organized by an association called Taiwan International Media and Education Association. And the goal of the association is to educate people through media and also create a link between Taiwan and international media outlets. So really one of the goals of the festival, and I hope I don't sound preaching, but was almost to educate people and show the whole globality. It's not just depressing films about rejection. There's also family that accept gay people, and there's also happy moments, and there's also, of course, there's sad moments. The LGBT community, the queer community, we are human beings. I mean, that's the whole point. So they're human stories, beautifully told human stories.
What about funding? Because, you know, Taiwan is one of those places where, you know, I describe it to people saying, well, it's a very traditional culture, but yet at the same time, very progressive. It's sort of like these two worlds kind of coexist and are moving together at the same, you know, at the same time. What, was it difficult or was it easy to find funding from companies that are wishing to sponsor this kind of thing?
All of the above. I mean, some companies were very welcoming and very ready to help us, and they thought that we were just a great idea. For example, the hotel Just Sleep or the airline United. And a lot of our companies were really like Moshi. They help us a lot. A lot of our sponsors, Avida, there's also product, beauty products, and they were also very welcoming and willing. And we also encounter others that I shall not mention, that they politely said that they don't really want to be related to LGBT queer content. But I also think one of the challenges is not just because we were a queer film festival. I think one of the challenges, and this for anyone that's listening to thinking about organizing a film festival, is when it's your first year, people don't know you. So I think the hardest thing was to make people, let people to trust us. And that was mainly for our first sponsor, that it's Portico Media. It's a media company. And they really, once you get one sponsor, the rest, it's easier to gain trust from others.
Now, last weekend, Taipei had its annual gay pride parade, which attracted over 50,000 people, which is a lot more compared to the first one a number of years ago, where only a few hundred showed up. How would you describe it, what's happening here? Because now, even in the Executive Yuan, and for people who don't know what the Executive Yuan is sort of like the Taiwan equivalent to the U.S. Senate or Congress. They're also now starting to discuss the issue of same-sex marriages, which, of course, if it is passed in Taiwan, would be the first country in Asia to actually pass such a thing. Why do you think it's because of the oppression that was here before that is moving Taiwan towards this direction?
So I think that there are many things that play into this. As you were saying, first of all, it was a very, very repressed society, military repressed. And normally, if you look at what happened in other Western countries, in Spain or even in Chile, where I come from, once a repressed society free itself, normally it tries to really take advantage of that freedom, to say so. So if you look into Taiwan, it's not just the LGBT movement, but you had the students protesting not long ago. You have, like, people are more willing to protest, express themselves, go on strike, demand for changes. I think that people in Taiwan somehow understood that you have to ask for changes for them to happen. So I think it's a very open, as you said, you said it very well, it's a very traditional society in many aspects, but it's also a very open society to tolerance and to ask for changes and to want changes. And if you talk to Taiwanese people, especially the young generation, they're completely okay with LGBT queer people. And there have been studies, there have been research that more than the 53% of the population will approve of gay marriage. So, you see, I don't think it's not just China or Asia. I think Taiwan has evolved. It has a rich history of many different influence from China to Japan to the States to Korea to their own traditional culture from the Aborigines here. So it's a very special country in Asia.
One final question. I mean, for the filmmakers whose films were presented at the film festival, was this something that was easy to do?
That was the easiest part, because a lot of them were like, oh yes, we haven't been shown in Taiwan or we haven't been shown in Asia. So a lot of the filmmakers, especially the independent ones, they loved to have their film shown in Asia or shown in Taiwan. So it was pretty good reaction all over, really. I think we got a lot of support from everybody.
Victor Stevenson of the Taiwan International Queer Film Festival spoke with Keith Perrin. In related news, an iconic theater in Kiev was burned to the ground this week during a local youth festival screening of a French drama about a cross-dressing official in the 1950s. Ukrainian authorities won't say whether the firebomb attack was political or business-related. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Natalie Peoples, Ryan Pest, Jen Mahoney, Kate Clinton, and Keith Perrin contributed program material. You heard music by Brian Wilson and Van Dyke Parks, and from the Little Abner movie soundtrack. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2CHR Setsnap, New South Wales, KZYX, Fort Bragg, Philo, and Coastal Mendocino County, California, QNation.FM, Cleveland, Ohio, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.